This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So as you know, I saw Mary Margulies last night at time of this episode going live, two nights ago, because we're being chaotic today. But I saw Mary Margulies on stage.
How was that?
She, okay. I know people get quite divisive about Miriam Margulies. She's kind of like the nation's Marmite, but I love her. Okay, like there's just something about like how self-confident and that she portrays herself to be, and just how like unabashedly herself she is. It just really, I just love it. I just find it inspirational. And so Tom Allen was interviewing her, which I wasn't expecting. So that was a surprise. And they actually, two very people that I wouldn't expect to see in the same room, but he handled her really well, like asked really interesting questions, talked about coming out, which I think, not to get serious right off the bat, but she has very, very interesting opinions about coming out, which I don't personally agree with, but I find it very interesting.
Oh, tell me.
So her perception, she writes about it in her first book, This Much Is True, but she regrets coming out to her parents. Obviously, her parents have both passed away now. She's 82. But her parents were quite a traditional Jewish couple, and she said that when she came out, I think she came out when she was 27, so like 60s 70s time, she said it broke her mother's heart, and her dad kind of wasn't the same again with her, and she kind of really regrets doing it. And she said, you know, like, I really wish I hadn't. And she feels like people shouldn't have to. And I agree with that to an extent, but also I was like, she kind of phrases it as arrogant or egotistical of queer people to come out, which is
right.
Which is very interesting. And like, she doesn't mean it in a nasty way. I think she means like, I can kind of understand it, but I can't articulate. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's
what you think.
Generally hard to argue with someone's personal experience.
Yeah.
Like, clearly it's coming from a place that's makes a lot of sense to her. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to argue with it. But yeah, I don't think that's great advice necessarily for the majority of queer people. But it's kind of, you know, kind of understandable where she's coming from her personal experience.
For sure. I think she's quite clear that of it, in that everyone is different, and obviously it's different for younger people now. But I think she even acknowledged in recent times that her audience has got younger, because she went viral on TikTok for this funny video of her in a swimsuit in, I can't remember what country it was, but oh, it's such a good video. But that's kind of opened her up to a younger audience, and so I think she acknowledges that her opinions are of her time. So I think that is good. But I just thought it was really interesting that she was just like, who are we to do this? But obviously that's her experience growing up gay and Jewish and, you know, born during the war.
Listen, like, what you're talking about is actually super relevant for this episode.
Yeah.
Did you think it? Like, there's so many films I'm even thinking about right now where this is kind of part of the narrative, like not coming out and not really planning to.
Yeah, just and like living.
And then, I mean, this is a spoiler for the episode, but we're going to talk about a film where this is literally a third of the narrative.
Yeah.
And
it's true. And those people, they would have been born during the war or prior to the war.
Exactly.
There's a book called Lesbian Life Stories, and it mostly focuses on baby boomers who are queer or queer women that were born prior to the war. And their perceptions are very, very different. And they deal with a lot of the issues that we are going to go on to talk about with the films. But obviously, it's rare that we get a living narrative like Miriam's. I don't have any other elderly lesbians. That's how she describes herself, an elderly lesbian. I don't have anyone else. I don't follow anyone else. It is interesting but also refreshing to get that older perspective. And her show was very, very funny, but it also did make me think. And she did have a Facebook forum where you could ask questions. And I did submit for the podcast. I did try and ask her favorite queer film, but Tom Allen didn't pick my questions. So
that's outrageous.
Tom Allen, I love you, but next time.
But if it's like Loving Annabelle.
Can you imagine if she's a Loving Annabelle stan? I'd have to stop. I'd be like, God. Your books. No.
She's a Jenny's Wedding apologist. Well, bless her. She's so funny. I love when she pops up on my TikTok when she's on like the Graham Norton show.
Yeah.
Says some stupid stuff.
Her,
see, I'm not cussing. I told you I wouldn't cuss.
You're so good to me.
Stuff.
I know.
She's so funny.
Her Graham Norton appearances are the best. She talks about, I don't know if it's in the book, but she talked about how she went to go and see Dolly Parton with Graham Norton and she let out a fart, and she was just telling this story, but the way she tells it, I was like, I'm dying. This is the representation I crave. But yeah, no, she's fab.
And we're live.
Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual!
Lesbian.
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said!
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello, and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
Of course.
I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Gay Actually, the podcast that you can rely on for all of your LGBTQ+ shenanigans. Happy Bisexual Awareness Week. We are thriving in September 2023. We see all of you, bisexual babes. Shout out to you for this episode. My name is Amber, and as always, I am joined by the smiling queen, the lesbian, the
I was waiting for a great alliteration.
My brain just stopped. The lovely lesbian lady, Joyce Watty. Hi, Queenie.
Hi.
How are you
Thank
doing?
Thank you. I didn't know my last name was on this podcast. I'm just kidding.
Does it not want to be? Because I can stop.
It can. No one knows how to spell it anyway, so. Yeah. Anyway, hi, everyone.
How's it going?
It's going fine. I feel like it's been ages since we were recorded. Was that since Manchester?
Yeah, it's been I think it's been about a, well, I think we did one after that. But I think it so what happened was we recorded a few episodes up front to get ahead of the game because we are organized queens. And then I went on holiday. And then yeah. It's been like a month since we've sat down to record. So hey girl.
Yeah. Hi.
We are recording a lot later than we usually do virtually. So this could be messy considering that I have to edit and upload this in 12 hours. So let's go.
So sympathetic.
Oh, it's
for you
fine.
Right now.
It's fine. I had a look at our, this is a side note, which I might cut out. I'm going to make my life very difficult. But I had a look at our analytics earlier, and 78% of our audience is in the UK. So hello, everyone. And the next highest percentage is in Germany. So, hello.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag to our German listeners. Yeah. I cannot speak German. You also can't speak German.
Deutsch. Nein. What are we? How do you say homosexual in German?
Oh, you're asking. I've never had a German lesson in my life.
Do you know that TikTok of that little German boy who's interviewing girls on the street?
Ratatata! That one, right?
That one! Oh my god, I love it. So when I asked, how do you say homosexual in German? That is how you say
that. Ratatata! And we've lost all 6% of our German listeners.
I'm so sorry, but thank you for tuning in.
Yes, thank you very much. We're very, very grateful that you're here. If there's any German queer films that you would like us to review, please let us know. I would like to expand my horizons.
Oh, yeah. I would love to watch a German queer film.
I actually still need to see Magden in Uniform.
Actually, I have seen that one. Mm-hmm. And that was... So, you Germans, you're great. Great for that.
That's so
because
good.
That was like one of the first depictions of lesbianism in film, in a German film in like what, 31?
Yeah, the OG.
Mad. I have seen that one. It's actually, and I've seen like the two remakes as well.
Yeah, I've not seen it and I should have done because I did a film module, as you well know, in Weimar cinema. I very much enjoyed it. All of the queer subtexts are very interesting in that period of cinema. So yeah, let us know. If there's any requests, let us know. But anyway, I digress. Joyce, what are we going to be talking about today?
So today, we are going to talk about a very interesting and broad theme. Can be interpreted in a lot of ways. We'll give you our interpretation in a bit. But we want to talk about Frozen in Time. So queerness on film, Frozen in Time, queer films that are frozen in time. What does it mean? How do we move forward? How does it inform us about queer history and queer cinema and queer cinema in history, you know? So...
You explain that better than I ever could, because we had a lot of back and forth about this theme, didn't we? Because originally I had the idea to talk about if these walls could talk too. And I didn't want to just do a review on it because that's already been done. I don't want to look like we're ripping anyone off. That's not my intention. And at first I was like, Ellen DeGeneres is in it. It's problematic. Forgetting that actually, as a teenager, I had a very, very positive and interesting relationship with this film. Like, this was a defining film for me. And I just kind of forgot and then rewatched it the other day and then was like, this film isn't bad. This is not a bad film. Why did I invent that it was bad in my mind? And perhaps it's to do with how the film plays with time. I don't know. But anyway, when you experienced it for the first time, Joyce, I mean, you won't mind me saying that you were messaging me like, this is so good. I'm really enjoying it. And I was like, that used to be me. Like, where did that go? Like, where did that relationship to that go? Because I remember watching this film 15, 16, loved it. But I don't necessarily feel that way now.
I mean, as a film, I'll say it's definitely not my favorite. It's also not... I'm not going to say I loved it, but I thought that the way they handled the themes was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of like those little fragments of like lesbian stories throughout different time periods. I thought that was really interesting, especially if you think about it, the time periods we're seeing here are all kind of within, I'm not gonna say our lifetimes because that's not quite accurate, but kind of like it's not that far back. Like no, the earliest one is what, in the 60s?
Yes, it? Yes.
So, you know, my parents are from the 60s. Like, it's not that far back.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to have kind of, to have these three fragments and see how much evolution there is just within those three moments. Mm-hmm. And then kind of think, okay, that was 23 years ago, the last one. Where are we now? Like, what has changed? That I just thought that they picked really interesting themes for each fragment.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about this as well. I can think of other films that were made after that kind of tackle each of these three subjects.
Yes.
Perhaps in a worse way. Some of them may be better, but they're still kind of frozen in time in their own way.
For sure.
Specific to when they were made.
Yeah. I think this film by no means is like, it is a pocket in time. Like, for me, it doesn't age well. However, it kind of, in this particular area of lesbian cinema, I feel like it sets the groundwork for, as you say, a lot of these issues to be discussed later. By no means is it the pioneering film, but it's kind of just, it comes out in 2000, the turn of the century. We've got But I'm a Cheerleader coming out around the same time. We have a background in queer cinema scholarly now. And it's just kind of interesting to kind of place that in and kind of be like, here are some issues that were being debated when we were like 2, 3. And now we're adults. And then we've got a whole range of other films to the point where I'm like, oh, this one isn't, it's not the best. Like, it's just kind of the perception of time, I think, is very interesting in connection to it.
Yeah,
for sure.
If we're gonna start talking about it,
oh, let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay. You told me this before I watched the film. Just for context, I watched If These Walls Could Talk 2 last night for the first time ever. I didn't even know it existed.
I've seen it like 10 times.
This film has been off my radar my entire life. Okay.
See, that's so, like, interesting because obviously, like, when I was a teenager, I was like, I think I'm gay. What do I do? So I watched Ellen, right?
Oh, you were one of those.
Yes. I'm not afraid to admit it. I'll tell you what I'm not.
I loved Ellen.
Yeah, me too. But I don't like her now. But maybe, I think that's why this film kind of got shut away for me, because of all of that stuff. And I just was like, nope, nope. And that's why in my head I was like, I hate it. I think that was part of the reason. But, you know.
I get it. And, like, the thing with Ellen for me personally, I don't really care. Celebrities, you know, yes, but also I just really, my stance on these kind of things is that we have no idea what actually happens, what goes on in their lives,
yeah,
what the truth is. We're just fed information, right? For sure. I'm always very, like, gray on things. And I'm not an apologist. I'm not defending anyone. Listen. Hey, if you're a bad person, you're a bad person. Okay. Whatever. But Ellen has done amazing things for the queer community, for lesbians. She really has. Like,
yeah, she was the mainstream lesbian for a long time.
And she made it visible in a lot of spaces where it wasn't before. So she's done amazing things. And this film is one of those, you know.
This film is insane. For those that don't know, it's called If These Walls Could Talk 2 because it's an HBO sequel to If These Walls Could Talk. And that was stories, it was also an anthology film, but it was stories related to abortion. And this one deals with lesbian couples. So the three segments are in 1961, 1972, and 2000. And they were also, as I recently learned, directed by three different women, all three segments, which I think is really interesting for one film. So I believe the first one was directed by Jane Anderson, and then respectively Martha Coolidge, and then Anne Heche, who actually was dating Ellen at this time.
Spicy. So
they were in a relationship. I have to say, RIP to Anne Heche, because didn't she die recently?
Oh, what?
Oh, she died last year in a car accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it pop up on BBC and being like, that's a name I've not thought about in 10 years. But again, like, I watched a lot of her work because, like, she directed this. She directed the part that Ellen was in. And they were dating at the time. And they went to the premiere together. And it was, like, Ellen's first, like, really, really public same-sex relationship. But anyway, slight tangent. RIP Anne Heche.
We digress.
Also, yeah, she directed this, the final part. So, I mean, how do you want to tackle this? Do you want to start talking through the parts or the themes?
Let's actually start at the very start, because I think
let's
kind of
start at the very beginning.
That was completely unexpected. The pop off, Amber. The start of If These Walls Could Talk Too, I think, kind of describes our theme for this entire episode. We are in the cinema watching The Children's Hour.
Oh.
The camera, we're kind of just seeing the screen, and the camera pans and we see that we're in a cinema, and we kind of start seeing people's reaction to the big scene at the end of the film.
And it's that scene. Is in our intro. I have loved you the way they said.
They said.
Oh my God, Shelley MacLaine, it's come through.
Oh, heartbreaking. Anyway, that scene is playing. We see people's reaction to it, and kind of different types of reactions. People walking out, people laughing, kind of making fun of what they're seeing. In this heart-wrenching scene. Walking out, yeah. And then we see two women that are just crying and holding each other's hand. And obviously we immediately get it. Like, yeah. These are two lesbians going to the cinema to watch a queer film and seeing, literally being traumatized.
And they're finally, but also they're finally seen on screen. So seen, it's a collection
in a bad way. Yeah.
So it's a collection of emotions being like, yes, finally I'm being represented. But also, oh my God.
And this is,
you know, considering how The Children's Hour goes, high drama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As Abby says, high drama.
This is something we talk about all the time on a podcast, is what is good representation? Is it worth it to be seen even when it's bad? Right? We talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see this from like a third perspective. Like, we see these two women in the 60s that are together, but hiding it, watching a story that has a lesbian in it. And it's traumatic.
Yeah.
And this is what it means, that frozen in time. Because we see this moment. We see what this meant, this film. Because we watched The Children's Hours now. Children's Hour now.
Yeah.
But I never thought about what was that like for a lesbian watching that in the 60s.
When in it came 1961.
Out. Yeah.
Like.
So we get that. We get this moment in
yeah,
here.
Yeah. It immediately grounds the film, doesn't it? It's like, right, this is the beginning. This is where we're going to go. This is how women were feeling at this time.
Yeah. And this is how the world reacts around them.
Yeah. All the time. And then even when, so it's Edith and Abby, Vanessa Redgrave, love that. And, you know, when they're leaving the cinema, they're like kind of dismissing it to, you don't hear their real opinion about the film, which I think is really interesting. She just says to the guy, being like, did you enjoy it? He's like, oh, too much high drama for my taste. Just like dismissing it all. But you never actually hear what they really think. But then you kind of see what they really think, because when they walk past those young couples and those young teenagers kind of looking at them and kind of kissing each other, that's the moment where you're like, ah, we have no idea what they've gone through. Like, that like looking at the younger generation, like the future, and being like, oh, like I'm not getting a nice reaction. Mm. It's also nice to see older gay people on screen.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot of that.
No. And so for each of the segments in this film, I could think about some other films that reminded me of it. And this kind of gave me the same...
What films?
A Secret Love.
Ooh!
Which is a documentary, but it talks exactly about this. Two old women that come out when they're in their 90s to their family.
That made me cry so hard.
Oh, like a baby.
It's on Netflix if anyone wants to watch it, if you've not seen it, but it's beautiful. And there's so many stories like it, you know. I think I recommended the book earlier, Lesbian Life Stories. It talks about how these couples have been together 40-50 years and then they finally get legally married. Oh my god, my heart. The way I cry every damn time.
There's just something about like people that are like your grandma's age being lesbians. I just love it.
Yeah, like
it
Miriam.
Makes me feel so comforted. Like Miriam. Makes me feel so comforted. Like,
but also, like, I just so respect, like, realizing you're gay in the 60s. That time in the UK, it was illegal. It was against well, lesbianism was never illegal, but that's a whole other story, honey. But
check back on episode whatever we did on this subject.
Episode whatever we did. UK well, classic what episode cinema. Was it?
Three or four? Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the early ones. Really, I enjoyed that one.
That was good.
But yeah, anyway.
So this...
They're so cute, the two of them, though, aren't they?
God, this story was so sad.
You get such a small time of the two of them interacting together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so beautiful. And like now I'm older. I think when I watched this when I was 15, I was like, meh. But now I'm older. Not that I'm that much older. Anyway, like I kind of am like, oh, that's an aspiration. That's nice. Like to see them so contented with one another, like in their little insular domestic bliss. I'm like, yeah, that is nice. Yes, please.
It is. Until.
Spoilers.
Until. Give me the names again. Edith?
Edith.
Abby?
And Abby, yeah.
Is it Abby that falls?
Abby is the one that falls.
Until Abby falls off a ladder, has a stroke, and passes away.
Like, just like that.
Just like that. And my God, there is a scene in the hospital before we know that Abby is dead.
No, because it's actually queer trauma, this.
Where Edith is talking to a woman whose husband just had a heart attack. And the woman asks her, did you ever have a husband? She says, no, I was never married. And she says, you're lucky, because you'll never have the heartbreak of losing one.
The way two I'm seconds shaking later, my head right now.
Literally. 2 seconds later, Edith gets refused visitation because she's just a friend and only family is allowed to visit outside of visitation hours. And next...
The way, honestly, like the way this happened before same-sex marriage was legalized, like, because I don't know how it works with straight couples, like if it's just your partner, but like back in the day, same-sex couples, no, you're not allowed in. And some gay people, they wouldn't be speaking to their families because they've come out and been ostracized. Like, not to get really dark, but like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I this was so hard for me to watch.
It's horrible.
I found it so heartbreaking. I just can't. It was painful. Every time something new happened, it was painful. Her partner dies, her life partner, they've been living together for 32 years. Her life partner dies, and she didn't even get to say goodbye or say bye to the body or talk to her when she was still alive because she wasn't allowed visitation because she's just a friend. But then on top of that, a million other things happen that are bad.
This is the thing. So... Basically, obviously, Abby's nephew is next of kin. He doesn't really know her. He turns up with his wife and daughter. So what confuses me is that the house goes to him, But is it solely in Abby's name, or is it in Edith and Abby's name?
Because it was solely in Abby's name.
See, because it wasn't in both of their names, he gets everything and she gets nothing. And she was like, I've paid off the mortgage for this home. And that, I think, is a relatable thing for women of that time, that like when their partner died, it was just like, oh, like I have nothing now. Like it doesn't go to me.
Yeah.
And it's mad. It's mad.
Yeah. She loses everything. She loses, oh my gosh, she loses everything.
And the worst part is there's no closure about where she goes. We don't know what happens to Edith.
I think she becomes a bird.
I hope she became a bird so she could just fly away. Honestly,
this was so hard to watch.
Yeah, and we have a note about how queer love stories are becoming more timeless because they're less focused on queer issues. But I wondered what you thought about that.
Yeah, so the way we're talking about Frozen in Time, this is obviously very fixed in a specific time period, and actually, the film Freeheld. Mm. Talks about kind of the same thing, and that film is a lot more recent. Sure. So I'm not going to say that this is just about the 60s, but that invisibility of queerness is very specific to that time, right?
So walk me through what happens in Freeheld.
So I blocked that out.
Okay.
That was the saddest thing
it's
ever.
It's Julianne Moore, right? And
Julianne Moore and Elliot Page. And queer couple, and then Julianne Moore is terminally ill, and Elliot Page has to fight to get any rights.
Awful.
Post Julianne Moore's life. I forgot their names. It's based on a real story.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly sad. So kind of based on the same idea of this love is real, but it isn't recognized.
Yeah.
And it is made invisible. Obviously in the 60s here, what we see in If These Walls Could Talk too, a lot more invisible. I mean, completely invisible. The one person that seems to get it a little bit is the little girl when she walks into Edith crying really hard.
Oh my God.
At some point, she seems to get something more, but the rest is just completely oblivious.
But do you think she represents the next generation? Like, obviously, then we flash forward in time, but you know, when at the end, when they leave the house and she only shakes the little girl's hand, it's like, right. You know, you know, you're taking that with you now. Hopefully you'll learn from that and take that with you when you grow up. And maybe it will get a little bit better each time, which is kind of what the film does. It gets a little bit better each time, each story we go through.
Yeah, maybe that makes sense. It could. Yeah.
I didn't explain that very eloquently, but.
No, I know what you mean, though. Yeah, I think that girl also represents kind of like the innocence of being a child when, like, you don't really have a formed opinion about things like homosexuality because no one's told you yet, you know, and you only form that because of your environmental context. So kind of showing like that innocence and that she just hasn't formed any opinion yet kind of that oblivion, but in a nice way. Trying to describe this eloquently, but I think she represents a lot of different things.
For sure.
But anyway, to get back to the thing about queer stories and how they evolve, talking about how the subject matter is so fixed in time, right? Like, this is specific to this time. This is also the purpose of this film, so that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And what I was trying to say with that point is that for what feels like the first time, queer stories that are being told are a lot less fixed in time because they don't necessarily have to be as much anymore.
No, it can, like, be more timeless.
I feel like a lot of films that we've had in queer cinema over history have been about queer issues, and we're kind of starting to move away from that in the last few years.
Yeah, which is interesting, especially with like younger media. Like, obviously we've talked about Heartstopper, and then the new series of Sex Education comes out today when this episode goes live. And that obviously deals with queer issues, but like not queer issues in the sense that it's like a big drama. It's just kind of like we're just figuring ourselves out. We're figuring out our identities and who we are, like together, and it's not like,
and that is something timeless. Changed.
Yeah, it is a timeless issue, especially for queer people, like coming to terms with yourself, rather than society thinks this is wrong. Like we've kind of moved away from that a little bit, and that is nice. That is nice in some ways.
So yeah, broke my heart, cried, wanted to die, but
Vanessa Redgrave, national treasure. Miriam Margolyes talks about Vanessa Redgrave as well. Has so much respect for her,
which I love.
So anyway, shall we move on to part two? 1972. So 11 years later, did we say that? That in If These Walls Can Talk Too, it's all three stories are set in the same house. Joyce.
My jaw just dropped.
That's the point. If These Walls what? Could Talk.
Oh! Wow. Gay house?
Joyce,
where do I move in?
Please. Wow. Tell me you understood that before.
No.
Right, okay.
No.
So, for those that don't know, this film... that's the three stories. We're moving through time. We have montages of like queer rights marches and movements and people doing speeches and stuff. But we always have a shot of the house at the start, and it's the same house. There's three queer narratives in the same house.
So you know how people say that you are born gay? What if you're not born gay, but you just are born in a house where you become gay? Someone needs to sage that house. I'm kidding.
No.
Never sage away the gay. I know.
Sage the gay away. No.
That sounds like something RuPaul would say.
Anyway, same house. We cut forward to Michelle Williams, who we've spoken about in our Brokeback Mountain episode on our Gay Actually channel. On Spotify. Plug.
I love her.
She's great. She's fab. She looks good in this.
She looks so young.
She does look very young. But she is a college student, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we have Michelle Williams and her three housemates living in the house. They're all at college together. One of the housemates is Natasha Lyonne. Now we know why what other famous queer film Natasha Lyonne was in during this time.
She blows had a my good mind. Year. Yeah, she did. Like, why would a person be cast repeatedly as a lesbian if they're a straight person? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not adding up.
Yep.
1 + 1 = 5, right?
This part, so the four of them are kind of, they're in a feminist group at their college, and then all of a sudden the feminist group is like, the uni is threatening to close us down, we can't deal with your lesbian issues right now, and they're like, screw you, man. And there's tension. And during all of this, Michelle's character they go to a lesbian bar, and she meets Amy, aka Motorbike Lesbian God.
To be honest, like... okay, that's it.
Yes, correct.
Like, that's not even like my type, but like, you know what I mean?
No, like, no, it's all of our types. Like, even if it's not our type, it's our type.
It's like, our type.
The gentle suaveness.
Suave, that's such a good word.
Yeah. Women can be suave. Like,
suave.
This. Amy is suave.
Plus, if you're gonna dress like a man and you do it that way
and that well,
you look better than any man.
Women in suits.
Therefore,
women in suits. We've said this in our TAR episode. Women in suits.
Anytime. Like, I honestly, I need to. I love dressing like a man.
Me too.
Like, men's fashion on a hot woman. Not calling myself a hot woman, just in general. Men's fashion on a hot woman.
Yes.
Like. Sorry, but like, mommy?
What?
Sorry?
Please. Please.
Do you want to keep this episode appropriate or like?
I'm keeping that in.
Okay.
No, because like, it's true. Like, any woman in a suit, yes. Like, 1,000%.
giving you a free pack of cigarettes. I don't condone smoking. This is not what it's about.
I don't smoke. I just carry them around to look tough.
It's a metaphor.
No, no.
You hold the thing that kills you, but you don't give it the power.
No, no. That's not this.
I'm sorry, that was the straightest thing I've ever said. Okay.
Don't ruin Amy for me.
Amy only has cigarettes to pick up women. It's iconic.
Valid.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't smoke, but...
I only have cigarettes to pick up women.
Women in suits aside, this second part... to be honest, this film is my favourite part. However, there are some... I think in some parts it's self-aware and some parts it isn't. To do with it, like, making a comment on the internalized...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's misogyny that some lesbians during that time may have had. And it's very clear that, you know, she, Michelle Williams' character is called Linda. Linda is obviously kind of intrigued by Amy. Kind of like, But her friends are quite mean. They're like, they're very... Yeah, they're awful. I said quite mean. That was my English way of being like, they're terrible people. But like, they're very, very explicit about being like, and I'll use their words and I'll bleep because I don't want to use any words that may offend. But they say there is a difference between being a lesbian and being a like, for them, it's two very different things. And I don't really think we have those distinctions now in our generation, but I don't know.
I mean, this was kind of new for me. I didn't know that was a thing back then. It's so right. Anti-feminist, it blows my mind.
Yeah, that but they think that they're being feminist, though, because they think that dressing masculine or dressing in a suit is anti-feminist. Like, because feminism, for them, is about femininity and being feminine as queer women.
Which is crazy, because...
Which was a thing.
It should be about being able to express yourself however you want as
exactly.
a woman.
And I think the film is very self-aware, and that's what it's trying to tell us.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, there are some other gender things going on now that wouldn't have been able to... They just wouldn't have been in a film in 2000. And I think if it was made now, issues of gender identity in relation to Amy's character may be more prevalent.
Yeah,
because they kind of allude to it and then just kind of don't talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I find that quite interesting because, like, Amy's wearing a binder, for example.
Yes, exactly.
And now that kind of imagery associates a lot with gender identity, like mm-hmm. you say, and like a lot of terminology that's pretty new to, yeah. to the world now.
For sure.
Like, you know, there would have... Seeing a binder, you would think about trans people, non-binary people, right? But there's no talk of gender kind of at all.
No.
Aside from the dress, the way that Amy dresses.
It's very... Because when Linda, after their first encounter, Linda is brushing her teeth in the morning and she finds this picture of her family and Amy is dressed in boys' clothes. And then there's a point where Amy goes to talk about her mother and Linda kind of stops her and says, I know, it's okay. And I took that as kind of some comment on gender that they weren't addressing. But I was watching it with my girlfriend and she was like, oh no, like that's just her acknowledging that her mum was okay with her dressing like that. So I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, I didn't think of it like that. So it's interesting how different people take different perceptions from it. I don't really know what the point was. I'd love to ask the director.
I don't really know either.
I think there's a line that sticks out that Natasha Lyonne's character says to Linda, saying about Amy, like, you're really not serious about this girl, are you, blah blah blah. And Linda's like, why are you being so mean? And Natasha Lyonne says, it's worse than imagining you with a man. Like, and that, like, that to me is so misogynistic. Like, that's so bad, right?
Like, Natasha, come on.
Come on, Natasha. Like,
no, that was shocking. And this is what I'm what I mean. Like, I had no idea this was a thing.
It was like a whole, yeah, a whole side to it. I don't know much about it, but it was like a whole side to lesbianism, like rejecting anything masculine. Right. Which, I mean, okay. You know, I can't comment on 70s feminism. but yeah
but I don't know, but I think the film did it pretty well. I think especially with the way it ended, and it kind of explores it with us in a very gentle way, and like a very kind of take it as it comes way that I quite appreciated. Like, you say, it's not really explicitly mentioned, and there's not much explained, but we understand it anyway. And I think that makes it a lot more timeless than you would expect. This is how it felt to me. This is why I thought this part was so great. This is my favorite part. It's yours too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, aside from just the story and it being so cute and sweet, like, the bitches actually are portrayed as bitches. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no one's siding with them. If you're siding with them, you have issues. I mean, sorry to say.
There's no redemption for them. Like, that no. is... And
they're being predatory when Amy's visiting.
Yeah.
But, like, actually predatory. Like, making Amy change in front of them because she's also a girl.
Oh, yeah, that's vile.
Do you remember that part?
Yeah,
that
was that's
f- weird. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, Natasha Lyonne's character being really possessive over Linda as if she's got some type of protective claim over her because they used to date once. I'm like, no. Going back to your point about time. What's interesting is I feel this most with this part is that it's such a fragment in time for these characters' lives. We don't know what came before. We don't know what comes after. We don't know any of their history, their background, their family dynamics, what happened to them up until this point, what happens after. And yet with Linda and Amy, their budding relationship, there's this familiarity and understanding that I think queer women just connect to. Like, we don't need to know anything about these characters. The experience that they're having on screen is enough to be like, yes, I see myself in you, and I know what you're going through. And, like, people who lived during that time, which, you know, there would have been people watching this film that lived that during that time. And that's quite nice to me. And I feel like that with this part the most.
Mm. Yeah. It was super cute. I really, really like this part. It made me think a lot of Summertime, the French film La Belle Saison.
Oh, oui,
oui. Oui, oui. Not just because of the feminist issue, just that part. But that film is set in, I think, 1970. I want to say it's either 1 or 3 in Paris, like kind of halfway between Paris and the countryside. Mm-hmm. About two women that fall in love, and kind of those things of intersecting feminism with lesbianism, and the role of men.
Interesting.
There's no like characters that are more masculine, which is obviously kind of one of the main aspects of of the part in If These Walls Could Talk Too, but yeah, it gave me the same vibe. And I think talking about those issues with feminism is just really interesting. It's an interesting intersection of queerness and feminism. I just thought it was really like interesting, this part.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's so fucking cute.
It's good. Really, it's cute.
Oh my God, I love it. Oh, I love it. It's so innocent and pure.
Yeah,
so cute.
It's like the start of something. Like we've just watched with the previous part, we've watched the end of something, and now we're watching the start of something. It's the start of something new.
Keep going.
Oh, you left me hanging.
I don't.
I was like, Gabriella, where are you?
I know. I've only seen High School Musical once. I know.
Please.
But I love Bet on It. That's from the second one, right?
Yeah.
Bet on it. I'm not gonna stop. I don't know how it is.
Not gonna stop till I get my shot.
Oh, this one. That's right.
Okay. I was like,
reach for the stars. That's completely not the melody.
That sounds like S Club 7.
Wait, what is it? How does it go? Okay. I give up. This is so embarrassing. I was not a Disney kid. I don't know what to say.
No, I didn't have Disney except like I had a friend that had Disney Channel, and when High School Musical 2 premiered, we went round to her house and dressed up and went to watch it.
Wow. Wild.
We went to watch High School Musical 2 on her TV. There was a countdown and everything.
Bet on it.
Vibes. Anyway, moving swiftly on, shall we discuss the last part? The Ellen DeGeneres, Sharon Stone, Dido sex montage part.
I love that you wrote that down as a note, because when Dido came on, I was like, oh, I'm at home. I'm home. Mommy,
and
I've arrived.
To thank you. What did you say? Mommy has arrived.
No, I said, Mommy, I've arrived.
Oh, that's worse. Oh my God.
I love Dido.
Me too.
I love Dido, and also the videos of Dido, like around the time when all these songs were coming out. She is hot.
Yes. The music video to this song I used to watch on repeat when I was like 6.
Damn.
Yeah. And then,
what a woman.
And then 10 years later, not even 10 years later, I think I was 15 when I watched this, I was way too young. I hear this song and Ellen DeGeneres and Sharon Stone are having sex to this song, and my brain is like, what is going on? Like, this is
criminal.
What? How dare you?
How dare you? But also, keep going.
But what did you think of the sex scene? We'll talk about it and then we'll just move on. We'll just have to talk about it. What did you think of it?
I found it. I just can't think of Ellen like a sexual being. Is that weird?
No, I totally get it. I feel exactly the same way. I felt that way.
That's
at the time.
So bad to say. No. But it was weird seeing Ellen having sex.
But it was like, obviously Sharon Stone, huge sex symbol in the 90s. Like, can't deny. Seeing her with Ellen. And the scene is weird. Like, there's lots of weird cuts. Like, there's some parts where you're like, they're not doing anything. They're just,
you know what? It was directed by Ellen's then girlfriend. She probably didn't want to.
That's such a good point.
That was Sharon Stone was in bed with her girlfriend.
I mean,
she was like, let's put Dido on it so we can make it as asexual as possible.
True.
I'm kidding.
Oh,
I love
now
Dido.
Now I get
Dido,
it.
I
now I get it. I get the motivation.
Yeah, it felt okay. You know what? When that part started, I felt this pure like nostalgic feeling for a time period I wasn't even alive in. Well, I was alive, but I was 2. Like that Dido music the vibe of the scene. I was like, wow, the 2000s, that was real, man.
Would you say
that was real, dude?
Would you say it's frozen in time?
This 100 million percent. This is the least timeless like part of this film.
Yeah. Well, this whole section is a Frozen in Time in that way. Like, it doesn't age
well. I mean,
I'm
not just talking about the sex scene.
No, I know. Yeah, no, like, me neither. The whole relationship to sperm donation. I mean, do you want to talk about the plot for the last bit?
Yeah, so the last bit is about Ellen. What's Ellen's name in this part?
Cal?
Is
it Al? It's not Ellen. Can you imagine?
That's so gay.
So it's Fran and Cal. Cal is Ellen DeGeneres and Fran is Sharon Stone.
That's the gayest couple name I've ever heard, ever. Cal and Fran are a lesbian couple that live together. They seem quite wealthy, I'm not gonna lie. Anyway, they live together. They're definitely in a long-term partnership, and they want to have a child. Now, obviously, as a lesbian couple, that can't happen in a natural way.
And Cal voice that. I hate that I can't get you pregnant, she says.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they are trying to get pregnant. So this involves sperm banks, sperm donors, sperm injections. So much sperm. Just seed everywhere.
Don't you hate that as a lesbian couple, you really, more than anything you want in the world is a child, and you have to, it all has to involve sperm.
I mean, Fran is talking about this literally at one point where she's like, when I met you, she says that to Ellen/Cal, I thought I would never have a man again in my bed. And now I have to count on a man to get me pregnant.
I mean, isn't that wild?
It's very unfortunate.
They need to perfect that science.
Oh my god, they totally should. Like a female sperm, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, well, there's like an experimental idea that you can get pregnant without the need for a sperm. Like you can merge the DNA of two female eggs.
Wow.
But it's not happening yet.
That sounds like one of those things where you can completely design your baby. Like, if you're going that far, you might as well, like, choose their eye color and their hair color.
They're getting to that point in science, which is why it's, like, a bit like... Ooh.
So, basically, this is what it's about. I mean, it kind of follows them from their first, like, picking a donor to their first try to actually getting pregnant.
Yeah, and I think it... I don't know about you, but I feel like... It kind of posits these issues, but then doesn't go deep into them. Like, Cal quite clearly feels insecure and inadequate about being the quote-unquote other parent. But, like, these issues are kind of raised. And then it's kind of just like, moving on. Like, trying to keep it lighthearted. But it's like, no, you're actually raising some really, really important, not just, like, social issues for queer people, but at the time, very political issues. There were lots of people in the States that didn't think that queer people should be allowed to have children at all. So
yeah, it's quite easy for them.
Or even adopt.
Like, the whole process is quite easy.
Yeah.
The only time they get some judgment is when they're in a waiting room. And it's not even voiced. It's just like a few looks that are exchanged.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's kind of the only backlash they face.
I feel like it's quite a utopian way of looking at it, in a sense. And that's quite nice, being like, look, this is where we could get to in 2000. But, like, looking back at it 23 years later, you're kind of like, oh, okay, interesting. Because they talk about, Sharon Stone says, quote, let's have an ethnic baby, unquote. And then there's all kind of,
this is what makes it Frozen in Time.
Yeah, it's kind of like conversations like that, and you're kind of like, ooh! But then the conversation just moves on. So you're just like, oh, okay. Like, am I not allowed to think about that? Okay, cool. Bit strange. Also, like, the whole thing with the turkey baster, I was like, are we really going to perpetuate that? Okay.
I was so uncomfortable in that whole scene when Sharon gets all, like, dressed up in the... Yeah. Like, I don't even know what she's wearing. And she puts, like, flowers all over the bedroom, like... But, like, some fertile land.
Like,
it just...
Like, props for trying to make an uncomfortable experience romantic. Like, I understand that.
Oh, she was trying to make it romantic?
Well, I think, you know, because obviously they were hoping to conceive their child. Like, I think that was the point.
But she's wearing, like, feathers around her neck.
It's a bit strange.
It's like she was high. And then she boils the turkey baster and it, like... becomes like,
yeah, and also
melted.
Like turkey baster, like, and but then obviously they do show, like, she goes to the clinic and
On the fourth try.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we cut to the end and they just gasp and then they just dance in the bathroom. And you're like, oh, okay, that is
I'm
quite
like, the
nice.
Baby's going to fall out. This is the only thing I could think of. Like, stop jumping.
Joyce.
The baby's going to fall out.
Joyce. Come on. What? I think whilst the story does have its faults, it does lay the groundwork for later discussions and depictions on this film. And you know what I'm going to talk about. You know the film I'm going to talk about. The Kids Are All Right. That is
no,
the
not.
Other noughties. Well, it's 2010, so it's not really noughties. But that's the other depiction of sperm donation for a lesbian couple and what happens. And I mean, we do...
The Kids Are All Right.
And we're, right, so when that film came out, tangent, it's fine. We're going to tangent. But when this film came out, it was celebrated in the media. Like, Brokeback Mountain had come out 5 years before. Oh, finally, we're getting a mainstream lesbian film. Great. And boy, oh boy, was it the Brokeback Mountain effect, because it was, like, solely for straight audiences. Like, I mean, for a film that comes out in 2010, brilliant. Groundbreaking in some ways, but also... the point yeah. that this was it this Annette Bening won a Golden Globe for this film. This film was nominated in the 83rd Academy Awards. It was nominated for 4 Academy Awards. 4.
Yeah. Can you believe it? Like, and it, who
like it was written by a queer woman. Okay, fine. It is based on her truth. Okay, fine. But for a wide lesbian audience, not fine. And there was an article in The Independent, which I found from the time, and I'm going to try and open it, if my laptop will allow. The article is from November 2010, and it's called The Kids Are All Right, Not According to the Lesbian Lobby. It has been billed by critics and fans as a Hollywood lesbian lifestyle movie with a genuine mainstream appeal, but The Kids Are All Right is certainly not all right with one group, lesbians. Director Amen. Lisa Cholodenko may be heavily tipped for an Oscar nomination for her film, blah, blah, blah. But the movie has won little praise from the gay community, who say that the film trades on the heterosexual myth that all gay women secretly desire men. And that's the issue, is that Julianne Moore, one of the lesbians, for some reason, when meeting and striking up a friendship, the family strike up a friendship with the sperm donor of their 2 children.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, they sleep together. Why?
They sleep together. My whole thing with this film is, could the story feasibly happen? Yes. I'm sure this has happened many a time. And it's, I mean...
Well, apparently it's based in truth, so...
Yeah, I mean, listen, lesbians sometimes sleep with men. No judgment from anyone here.
Mm-mm.
Sexuality is fluid.
Not at
all, has nothing to
yeah.
do with it. People cheat. Also, once again, whatever. It's not an unrealistic story.
Yeah.
The point is that it's an Oscar-worthy film, or advertised as an Oscar-worthy queer film that was supposed to be progressive for representation, but it was completely meaningless to actual queer audiences.
Yeah.
This is the problem with this film.
You explain that so much better. But yes, and like that's why, like, similar to If These Walls Could Talk too, it's kind of frozen in time. Because can you imagine if this was made now? It doesn't serve queer audiences at all.
Not at all. It doesn't serve the queer... I almost said like narrative and I was like, that sounds like agenda. It doesn't serve the queer agenda. No, it doesn't actually serve anything for anyone.
No,
like, this is the type of film that my straight mom would watch and say, oh, this is amazing, and I would be like, what?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember watching the film at the time and being like, well, maybe I didn't watch it at the time, I think I must have watched it later, but I remember watching it, like, hearing that it was amazing and so good for like lesbian representation and same-sex families, and then watching it and being like, why do my feelings not match that? And like, no shade to the film. Good, well-made film.
Some shade to the film.
But some shade to the film. And I was trying to look at the reception at the time, and obviously that was, there was that article from The Independent. The general perception was kind of positive, but obviously that's the mainstream heterosexual perception.
And the Oscars give awards to everyone. Remember when Green Book won? Like, what was that all about? Crash won a, sorry, okay, no offense. I mean, full offense. Crash in 2005 won the Oscar for best.
But even Dallas Buyers Club, Jared Leto and Matthew McConaughey, one or both of them won Oscars. I don't know. I think both of them won Oscars for that film. And
it's
again,
so performative.
That's queer characters in, like, framed for a heterosexual audience. And, like, yeah, it is performative, and it is kind of like, and, like, I feel bad bringing it up in context to if these walls could talk too, because obviously that is intended for queer audiences, and, like, it's different, but it kind of does that same thing of it, like, it captures a pocket in time, which is just like, what?
At least Brokeback Mountain. I know we've talked about Brokeback Mountain in relation to this, and you even, like, wrote it down in our notes.
Yeah.
At least Brokeback Mountain is a good film.
Oh, so good. So
the
good.
The kids are all right. So my story with this film is I was, I think, about 15, also just starving for anything that was queer.
Classic.
To watch. Yeah. And I bought the Blu-ray because it was on discount in a store, and I used to buy DVDs and Blu-rays. And I watched it, and I was like, what the hell did I just spend 2 hours watching?
Yeah.
This is, I'm not interested. This was boring. I can't believe that it's literally the breakdown of a queer partnership.
Yeah.
In a time where those things are supposed to be celebrated. Like, this is a queer family with 2 children from a sperm donor, but, like, it's a normal family, just with 2 women. And this is something that should be celebrated, but instead it's breaking down because of, like you say, the most unethical reason, the sperm donor being in an affair with one of the women. Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
And like, no one wants to see this story except for maybe straight people that just want some love drama.
This is the thing. And there are other issues in their relationship. Like, Annette Bening's character struggles with drinking, and there's other stuff. And Julianne Moore's character is like, I just want you to notice me. I just want you to crave me. Like, all of this stuff. So in that sense, in hindsight, I'm slightly more sympathetic that it's interesting and good to see a same-sex couple struggle with real-world domestic problems. Like, it can't be, like, happy queer utopia all the time. I get that. But this came out in 2010, as you say, during a time where we needed that positive representation. We didn't need this then. Like, in hindsight, it's all well and good me being like, oh, you know, it's nice to see a realistic, like, same-sex couple. Like, you know, couples, things happen, as you said. But, like, this then was that, no. Like,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, yeah. And
but am I just threatened? Like,
no, I really don't think you are. I really don't think you're just threatened, because I see where you're coming from. Sorry, I'm, like, pointing, like.
I love it.
I'm very passionate.
So listen, into it.
I see where you're coming from. And this actually goes back to what we were just talking about with If These Walls Could Talk too, about Ellen's character being threatened kind of by the idea of, I can't biologically give you a child. What is my place in this partnership as a parent when I'm not the one getting pregnant? Blah, blah, blah. I wish I had sperm. Like, you know, this whole dilemma. We see kind of this story 10 years later. But with actual children, you know, the whole process has been done. And then we get to witness this sorry, you don't know, you need to keep this out. This ass. Okay, that's not any better. This ass. this awful, leave it at that. This, like, result. Like, you have these insecurities that 10 years before were shown on film. Like, these are insecurities that same-sex couples deal with when parenting. And 10 years later, this film comes out that is celebrated and is a Oscar Beatty film, or whatever you want to call it. God, I don't know how that got its awards. And it actually shows the worst case scenario of sperm donation.
This is the thing. And especially, like, I feel like it's kind of a slap in the face when those that came before us, as we've seen in Is These Walls Can Talk Too, like Fran and Cal, even Edith and Abby, way back when, paving the way before any of us were even freaking born for just an ounce of respect or positive representation. And all of these issues, even in 2000, were so delicate and so, like, no one talked about them, not in the States. Like, this was such a touchy subject and such a brave and bold film. Obviously, like, we can say what we want in 23 years down the line, but at the time, okay. And then we get The Kids Are All Right, and we're like, what is Mark Ruffalo doing here? Like, why is he here? Like, no.
I'm just, it's tragic. Yeah. It's just tragic.
Yeah, like, and I think I'm more harsh than I was then. Obviously because I'm older and wiser. But, like,
I just don't think it's right. And there's this other thing that I've noticed while thinking about this film is that, and this is why it's for straight audiences. This is literally, to me, this is the kind of main indicator.
Sure.
Is that this film constantly talks about the place of men in a lesbian relationship. You have,
yes.
And this is one scene. Now, I haven't seen this film in a while, but this is one scene that I always remembered because I just found it so curious. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was 15 when I first watched it, and I just found it interesting, like curious. I was like, is this actually like a thing? But there is a scene where one of the kids catches the moms are like watching gay porn. Or like maybe they found a VHS or something. But like gay, like men on men. And the two women, decide to talk to the kid about it. And they basically say something about how, because they're, sorry for this language. This is literally what they say. Because their arousal is internal because they're women. It's exciting for them to see it on the outside. It's fair and whatever, but I'm very, like, impartial about this. I don't care either way. This is not really the point. The point is that we constantly hear about men in their relationship.
Yes.
You have the sperm donor, which is a very big part of this film, obviously, not just the affair, but also before.
Yeah.
About his place, what his status is in the family. Like, is he a dad in a certain way, or is he just a sperm? I know, but the kids are also questioning it. So it's constant talk about him. There's meeting him, there's the affair with him, then there's, are you having sex with men now, like that whole discussion. And then the gay porn is just constantly talking about the space that men hold in this lesbian relationship
with their children.
Yeah, their children are very involved in it. So true. It's just weird to me. And I think this is why it never felt like a queer film to me.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't feel like
holds it. Men in the center.
Yeah. And it's kind of just constantly about that relationship between men and the two women. And it's kind of like, well, what am I watching this for? Because I could just watch, you know, some other random film that was nominated for an Oscar for no reason. And I would feel the exact same. Like,
not just one. Four. It was nominated for four Academy Awards.
I need to look this up now.
I've got it.
Okay,
right,
tell me what they were nominated for.
Including one for Best Picture.
What came out that year? Was this the worst year for cinema or what?
I don't know. Okay, the film was nominated for Best Picture at the 83rd Academy Awards. Benning and Ruffalo were nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actor, respectively. Cholodenko and Blumberg, the writers, were also nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
What? Are you serious?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. This is concerning.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that was the perception at the time. Wow, look at this look at this groundbreaking film featuring a same-sex couple with a family. That was the perception, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was hailed. In moments like this, I like to turn to Letterboxd, and whenever I am logging a film, I like to see if Joyce has written about the film. And you did write about The Kids Are Alright.
Oh no, what did I say?
Can I read
it? Oh no, I'm really scared. Yes, read it.
You gave the film 4 stars.
What?
Which is interesting.
When is this from? I'm so embarrassed.
I don't know. I can't see when it's from. But you said Julianne Moore, more like Julianne, move away from the d**k, you have a wife. Oh. And I read that like 2 hours ago and was like,
that is outrageous.
And that's valid. So if anyone sees that, give it a like on Letterboxd. Oh, I have. There's also another there's another review by Kyle. The kids may be all right, but is Mark Ruffalo's backyard ever get finished? Like, Julianne, honey, you had one job.
Oh my god. Ugh.
Anyway, do you on that lovely note, do you have any final thoughts about If These Walls Could Talk Too, Frozen in Time?
The kids, okay, yeah. I mean, I think the idea of Frozen in Time is super interesting, especially because we talked about this a lot yesterday, like you mentioned earlier, but kind of taking that angle where it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is still very fixed in the time it came out. And how can we look at that now and learn about how far we've come? That's really interesting to me. But then we have The Kids Are All Right, which is a good example of that's frozen in time because it's shit. It was shit then, but it's even worse now.
Do we have another more recent example of, say, like a show or a film about same-sex couples with kid issues? The only thing I'm thinking of is this random mid-teen, like 2010s show called The Fosters.
I never watched that.
But that was ages ago.
Right.
But like, do we have any more recent examples? Because I don't know if we do.
I actually don't know either.
Because The Kids Are All Right was like 13 years ago.
Yeah. It's not a very common theme in queer cinema.
Well, listeners, if you have any, let us know. We would love to watch them and maybe even review them.
Yeah. I wanted to add one more thing, and I'm just going to try and plug this film as much as I possibly can until everyone has seen it. That includes you, Amber, actually. I want to talk really briefly about this film that I love so dearly called Between Two Women, which is also, yes. This is going back to part one of If These Walls Could Talk Too. There's no death.
You have told me to watch this.
Yeah, and actually also to what you said about Miriam. Let me explain. First of all, that invisibility of queerness in like the 60s, that kind of time. Really interesting kind of seeing these two women have a relationship that blossoms in an environment that is not necessarily welcoming. And to talk about what Miriam said about coming out, yes or no, this film also talks about that.
Interesting.
I don't want to spoil it. And there's not much to spoil in general. But one of the women, you know what, I don't want to tell you because I really want you to watch it. But there's it really briefly talks about this idea of coming out. Is it something that's worth it? So it really doesn't delve into it, but it is, you know, I just really want you to watch it.
Yeah, you've been trying to get me to watch this for a while, so I think I'm going to have to just do it, and I think we are just going to have to talk about it.
And I will also just add, this is for everyone, there's two versions of the film. There's the short version, and there's the, I think, director's cut, longer version. Please, for the love of God, watch the longer version, because the short version cuts out all the good parts. And do you have any final thoughts on Frozen in Time?
I think it's interesting when we look back on films like this, especially films in my experience, revisiting films from adolescence, revisiting them as adults, because my opinions have changed multiple times in the 10 years since I first saw this film. And I like that my teenage opinions and my teenage self is kind of also frozen in time in that way, and I can look back on it and kind of be like, oh, look what you know now, that's nice, oh, look at that. And then also like, whoa. But
that's a really sweet way to put it. I like that.
But no, I think it's always interesting when we look back on kind of more, well, I don't know if historical is the right word to use for this film, but kind of more historical portrayals of lesbians and queer women, to kind of see who came before us and see what issues they were dealing with. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Great. And this was a really interesting episode. I think.
Yes.
Quite enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for talking to me about it. And thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, be sure to do the things. Rate us, follow us, leave a review. Joyce is laughing at me because I always try and segue really suavely into this and I just don't. I just scrabble around. You can follow us on Instagram at Gay Actually Podcast. We also have our own podcasting channel. You can search Gay Actually on Spotify and we will come up, have a look. We talk not just about film, but we talk about media, we talk about TV, we talk about culture. So if you're interested in those things in a queer context, pop on over. We'd love to have you. If you have any requests, you can DM us on Instagram or we are at gayactuallyuk@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Joyce.
Thank you as always, Amber.
Thank you all as always. Take care. Have a lovely time.
Yeah.
I was going to say have a lovely weekend, but this comes out on a Thursday. But anyway, stay safe, everyone. And goodbye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.